Today on Seculo, hit the road, Jack Smith.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey folks, welcome to Seculo. There's a lot to talk about as news continues to come out of the Trump transition, specifically President Trump with new nominations that he's making. If any of those happen while we're on air, of course, we'll try to get to those. And we'll also cover some of those that happened while we were not on the air yesterday. So we'll be talking about that in the first half hour as well. But there is news in the Trump legal world where, again, you want to see, if you are a President Trump supporter, all of these come to an end. And it's interesting what's happened in the Florida case involving the classified documents that led to a case at the 11th Circuit on whether or not the appointment of a special counsel is even constitutional. And Jack Smith has made a filing that the court has kind of, people have kind of interpreted as this case is over. And while I do think it's going that path, so far, Jack Smith is making moves that would only indicate that they were going that path. He's filed a motion for abeyance. So that is not to end the case or withdraw. That is to give them more time to do their reply brief, because we had already filed our briefing in that will. They had filed their initial briefing. Now it's their reply brief will not be due. I think they asked for till November 15th.
November 15th was the date that they were supposed to have it. Now it's December 2nd is what they're asking the court for in order to assess this unprecedented circumstance and determine the appropriate course going forward consistent with DOJ policy.
Yes. So, again, I think that this ultimately will be dropped. I mean, remember, President Trump, who has the authority to do it, has said Jack Smith will be fired on day one, and you know the Attorney General will, whoever that may be, if it's Matt Gaetz, will end up closing out these cases if for some reason they were still open. But it looks like that will be done even before President Trump takes the oath of office. They are on that path. But I want to tell you that the ACLJ will be monitoring it. We do want to explain it to you so you understand, because some of the news kind of acts like, okay, this is all completely done. In the legal world, until it's completely done, it's not completely done. And right now, he didn't file like a motion to vacate. He didn't file a motion to leave. He didn't file a motion to dismiss. He filed a motion to get more time to write a brief. And that pushes them even closer into Inauguration Day, still, you know, about a month out. So we were going to follow those very quickly. But it does look like, because of your votes, because of the people turning out in such big numbers, that a lot of the lawfare on the federal side has been and will be defeated. And you helped to defeat it by supporting the work of organizations like the ACLJ, by getting out the vote. And then we still have to see some of these state cases, though most of those are also likely to go by the wayside on the criminal side. And, you know, I think, again, will there be those in the trying to push the limits of what they can do legally with a sitting president on the left? Sure. But as we've argued before at the U.S. Supreme Court, we are representing President Trump. You know, you cannot have a president in office that has to worry about 2,000 partisan elected district attorneys in state who work for states, not and districts, not for the federal government, bringing charges against you because they don't like your political philosophy or your political, you know, your political ideas, the nominations you make, or the decisions that you make as president of the United States. And so I think, again, while they could attempt to continue lawfare, this is the 4 years we have to really turn that system off for good. And that might take some legal actions against others to do it. It's going to take some firings. It's going to take removing people. It's going to be making the standards a little easier for any of these future cabinet secretaries and department heads to be able to remove bureaucrats for bad actions, not just if they do something illegal or so beyond the pale, like saying don't go to Trump supporters' houses. Support the work of the ACLJ. It's obviously making a difference. You know it. Donate today, ACLJ.com.
hit the road, Jack. Don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more.
The hope, right? The hope is that Jack Smith in this, I mean, you know, we saw it with Mueller. We've seen it with impeachment. That the Democrats learn their lesson, at least. If you want to defeat Donald Trump's policies, try to convince some Republicans in the House to vote with you or Republicans in the Senate to vote with you. Don't try to make this about legally trying to remove a president or criminalize a president who has now been reelected by the American people. But I do want to go right to Harry Hutchinson from the director of our policy department and legal department as well, legal policy. Because Harry, I mean, what we're seeing is basically the news kind of saying, well, there's nothing really much to see here anymore. But there are a couple things to see. One is these cases are not yet closed out. So we have to keep an eye on them to make sure. Again, there are some still unfriendly judges who are overseeing these cases. We're still in this period of where a transition is official. And so I think it makes it impossible for them to really move forward if they're following their own rules. It is not done yet. And we at the ACLJ, because we are attorneys, don't like to act like as if, well, it's basically done, so don't worry about it. We want to make sure we know 100% when Jack Smith is done. And then the second question, which is this report, depending on when he tries to release it, and when it is written, I wonder if there's anything that can be done to prevent it from being released. Because if he tries to do it under the while Democrats still control the Office of Attorney General, I think he'll probably get it out. But if it's getting close, you know, those people may be less interested in just releasing things like that. They're going to get pressure. I wonder what you think about that.
Well, I think your analysis and your questions are spot on. And let me take the second question first. I think that Jack Smith will be under intense pressure from many Democrats in Congress to issue a report before the end of Joe Biden's term. And so if we think about individuals like Adam Schiff from California, incoming senator, he will certainly push for the release of these documents. He wants to do everything possible to damage Donald Trump as he takes office. But I think it's also clear to the American people that after last Tuesday's stunning election, that we are now beginning to witness the beginning of a temporary but not necessarily permanent end of official deep state resistance to Trump. And certainly we can see this at the federal level in the form of Jack Smith's filing with the court to basically hold his appeal in abeyance. And so I think the first step in that process was Judge Eileen Cannon's decision to dismiss the classified documents case against Trump. Second, though, we should note that Jack Smith's latest filing represents the acknowledgement of the fact that the left's loony lawfare campaign has backfired spectacularly, strengthening Trump's popularity. So one of the cautionary notes that I would offer to Jack Smith, if he wishes to try to release documents, is to ask him whether or not this will actually continue to strengthen Donald Trump's hand. It's important to keep in mind that we can compare the treatment of Donald Trump's treatment by Jack Smith with the treatment that Robert Hur offered with respect to President Biden. What happened with respect to President Biden's use of or deployment of or basically putting classified documents in his Corvette? Basically, Robert Hur said, well, the guy is a little incompetent, and so we're not going to proceed. So I think at the end of the day, Jack Smith should be aware of certain cautionary notes that are out there.
Yeah, I think, again, well, people, I don't think this needs to be on the top of their concern list at all about President Trump, you know, taking the oath. I think it's a reminder about what Democrats, this is going to be tougher for them to do without any majority, so that in the House or Senate. But we know that they love attempting to use the legal processes to hurt Trump. So far, it's backfired both in a political sense and in a legal sense. This whole idea of this 34 counts on felonies that are basically all about to be thrown out. The idea is that won't even be a statement you can lawfully make anymore, and it didn't even make it to appeal. A lot of those were I'd say tenuous at best, even in a regular court system. But that's going to have to be the case now. And then I think really the attention needs to go to what is the Biden administration, what moves do they try and make to blunt quick action by President Trump and his team when they take office. We know that this time period they can do things internationally. We have a situation where Turkey has cut off diplomatic relations fully with Israel, not just diplomatic, but all relations, as Erdogan said. So that's business. That's tourism, travel, economic. So where, again, the countries were having issues ambassador to ambassador and having governmental differences, that actually ceases then even the people of those countries doing business together, which is something that has been pretty normal over the years, though has certainly been kind of a back and a forth under Erdogan. I mean, the world, you've got Russia, you've got North Korea, you've got the Chinese. They're all going to figure out, and Iran, what can we do in this 67 days we've got before President Trump's in office?
Well, and Jordan, Jack Smith has a history, a very fine pedigree of losing cases on appeal. And so what I think the danger here and why he has to get out of the Florida case is because while Jack Smith has had his cases overturned against Governor McDonald out of Virginia, even he was the one who first led the attempt against Senator Menendez in New Jersey, all of those cases didn't go the way he wanted. Now, if he were to be the one that took the tool out of the left's toolbox of a special counsel by continuing to fight on appeal the lower court saying he's unconstitutional, that could then set off a chain reaction where it gets to the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court agrees, yeah, special counsels are unconstitutional and violate the appropriations clause and all of the things that Judge Cannon said.
It'd be kind of wonderful to happen, but
right.
I don't think it's going
to
happen.
So that's
with this
the danger,
case.
I think, why Jack Smith, no matter what, has to get out. I don't think anyone will read his report that he puts out because the lawfare that they've been trying to do against President Trump for now almost 8 full years, this is the culminating event. This is the crescendo, yeah. And it's going to go out of key. It's going to not work. And what you see is that after all that lawfare, President Trump didn't just win the popular vote. He won the majority of the country. A lot of people were saying, even if he wins the popular vote, it'll still just be a plurality because of third parties and everything. He's not going to get over 50%. He's still sitting at 50.1% of the vote, and that hasn't changed for days as California continues to put out votes. They're almost done counting there. He may win the majority of the country's vote despite 8 years of lawfare. What's Adam Schiff going to say? Read this report that the special counsel put out. Look at all this bad stuff. It's like nobody cared. No. He was leaking. The FBI was staging photographs at the raid at Mar-a-Lago before Jack Smith was even there. It didn't work. Let it go and get back to focusing on America.
What they'll try to seize on, I don't think it'll be successful either because, again, the American people have heard President Trump, and he's talked about this, and those around him is moves he might make, Harry, for those who have been detained for January 6th, from anyone who's had like actions taken against them from Rudy Giuliani with all these seizures of property to those who have been in prison now for years because of, again, something that, again, was illegal but usually doesn't come with a 20-year prison sentence.
Well, I think that's correct. And so I think what we have witnessed is legal overreach by Jack Smith. Secondarily, I would point out that even though Jack Smith's campaign against Donald Trump will likely end with a whimper, it's very, very likely that state actors such as Governor Newsom, Mayor Brandon Johnson of Chicago, Governor Pritzker of Illinois, they will continue their resistance campaign. But I think what they will likely miss is the fact that Donald Trump's agenda as Will correctly points out, is wildly popular with the American people.
Now, when we come back, we'll take your calls as well. 1-800-684-3110 if you want to talk about these legal issues or the president's cabinet picks so far. You know, we get a couple in the afternoon, even after we're on the air, so we've got more to talk about there. If you've got comments and questions about that, give us a call. 1-800-684-3110. There's, of course, one that we're very excited about that came right from the ACLJ and Seculo team of Tulsi Gabbard for DNI. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about others as well that got announced in the afternoon. Department of Justice, how some Democrats are reacting with kind of, well, what did you expect? Donald Trump has been very clear on the campaign trail about the people he wants to appoint, and that's what he has been doing to support the work of the ACLJ to make sure we get through these 67 days and that we're ready to go on the 20th. Donate today, ACLJ.com. All right, so one of the cabinet positions that hadn't yet been confirmed by a release from President Trump yet, but was pretty certain, but we are trying to hold back until that the Trump transition and the team releases the statement from him to make it, you know, it's official. And that is Florida Senator Marco Rubio, of course, who's run for president before, has worked closely with President Trump in his first term, focused primarily in the Senate on lots of issues. He's been there a long time, so he's become an expert in a lot of different areas, but on the international affairs, things that happened to do with our military, happened to do with our diplomatic work. So he has been nominated for Secretary of State. I think of all of the nominees so far, there might be some others too that are probably not going to be very controversial. I think that one goes through the Senate very smoothly. It kind of, again, balances off. It plays an interesting role because you've got President Trump and then you'll have someone like Marco Rubio. But then as we start talking about then who's in other spots, so I know you talked about Pete Hegseth for a little bit yesterday,
right, yep.
For DOD. So for DOD, you've got someone who's actually got kind of a different military leaning than Marco Rubio. You know, questioning on how much are we going to keep giving to Ukraine without an end to this conflict? Are we just going to keep sending hundreds of billions of dollars without being told what is the goal here? What gets us to an exit strategy so that this conflict and people stop being killed and we can rework and try to reestablish a relationship with one of the bigger countries in the world, Russia, as well as Ukraine. And so that they can, again, get to back to some sense of normalcy, which would be good for the United States. So I think, again, having that kind of yin and yang approach is not necessarily a bad thing when you're talking to our allies and you want to keep that Trump. Like he always said, he's just got to make them believe that there's a 5% chance he'll hit the button. And if there's a 5% chance he'll hit the button and destroy you, do you really want to take that? That's odds. That's real odds. That's not 1%. That's not 0.5. That's a 5% chance that everything I'm telling you all do right now, if you do this or don't do this, and you might say, no, you're crazy. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I am. Maybe I'm not. And I think he proved enough of that, too, in his first term, Will, the way he was able to, in a sense, keep Russia and North Korea more separated. Well, now they are not. Now, so I look at that, and I think that should be interesting. Does that mean all of these confirmations are going to be easy because there's a Republican majority? I don't think so. I mean, I think Elise Stefanik to the UN, ambassador to the UN, easy, smooth. I think Rubio will be smooth. So there'll be some others probably that have already been announced that will be smooth as well. But talking about some of these that just came out, I think with Matt Gaetz, it will be interesting to see in the lead up. But I think John Fetterman, who has been, you know, more and more somebody we've played on our broadcast and been kind of surprised by his one. I like his honesty. This is what he said about the Gaetz announcement as Attorney General. Usually I wouldn't want to play a Democrat, but I think the fact that he's got a smile on his face still and he understands this is how America voted is bigger than just kind of this, oh, woe is we, the country, you know, can't survive. The country survives regardless of who these appointments are. There's a president of the United States and a Congress. The appointments are very important as long as they are carrying out the duty, the policies of the president. That's their real focus. And, you know, the rest of those bureaucracies, they say, oh, you can't run all these things. No one is ready to run all these things on day one, even if you've run big law firms, huge international law firms. We've seen how those people have still gotten run over by the bureaucracy. Really, you're there to put the people in place who will then put the policies in place of the president and the policies that you think are best implemented through the agency or department that you're running. But here's Fetterman on the Gates announcement for Attorney General.
I mean, I would describe it as God-tier level trolling to just trigger a full-on China syndrome to own the libs in perpetuity.
I mean, own the libs in perpetuity. That means forever.
Right.
And that you get them to go in a full breakdown mode. God-level trolling, again, saying, you know, this is about as good of trolling as you can do. And the sense is, while they're calling it trolling, and I think that's a way for the left to look at it, he's also calling about owning the libs the entire time. So he's not playing it down.
Right.
He's saying that this is how Donald Trump, too, is going to come at you with his nominees because of what you did to him. This is the thing. What was done to Donald Trump was so horrendous while he was in office. Lord knows we know that. Started the second day when Comey sent those FBI officials in. That why would he not put people in who Democrats hate? And even some Republicans are worried about sometimes because they might be too loyal to the president. Do you think Eric Holder wasn't loyal to Obama? Think about that. I mean, so loyal. And then remember, even the second AG there, meeting on the tarmac with Hillary Clinton about everything going on and trying to figure out the Comey stuff. I mean, all of that, again, I think this is what the American people voted for President Trump in full to be president. And as president, you make these nominations, Will. And I mean, I think the full-on China syndrome, the fact that he's calling to own them in perpetuity, this was a party that thought the Republicans didn't have a way forward to win much more in the future. And now they're looking at our numbers and saying, how do we win?
That's right. And Jordan, I think also when you look at the way his first term went with the first announcements of people that he had within his cabinet versus where we're at now, is he understands the process clearly a lot better, is a lot more efficient at getting this done. But, you know, there are some people that are like, okay, some of the Marco Rubio hawkishness that, you know, that's not what we thought Donald Trump was, or even the Mike Waltz. Exactly. And remember even what he said with Tucker Carlson about John Bolton. He didn't agree with John Bolton on everything, but how useful it was to have him in the room as a negotiating piece. Now, clearly that relationship didn't work out because John Bolton turned against him.
Because he had it more about, like, if you're not going to do what John Bolton wants to do,
exactly,
you're wrong.
But having someone like Marco Rubio, who's not deep state like John Bolton was, having someone like Marco Rubio that's more hawkish or even Congressman Waltz, having those people that you can use as a chess piece as well to get things done more effectively, knowing that your adversary is going to be thinking, I mean, that guy could order a strike on me. I think it's very effective. You can't look like you're filling your cabinet full of a bunch of peace-loving hippies, because then no one's going to take you seriously if you don't have the strength to show for it.
At the end of the day,
president, though, is still President Trump.
Right. And I think what the difference will be is they will sometimes have differences. You have those discussions behind closed doors, and these are not the types of people that they've shown their support for the president. I think they saw the disloyalty factor. They don't want to be those people. If they ever got to a point where they thought, these are not policies I can actually support, I think they would just resign and go quietly. I don't think they'd have to go write a book immediately. We'll see. But I think that's what we're looking for in this next administration. And Tulsi Gabbard as well, we have not talked about as much yet either. So we'll talk about that when we get back from this break. But of course, you can understand our excitement here, bringing her onto our team. And then bringing her to you through our broadcast at least two times a week to talk about lots of different issues. I remember the first time she was on a set with us here in our Nashville studios and then spoke to our team. And that was at the beginning when some of you were saying, you know, it's interesting. Do we trust her? Do you support her? And then you've kind of seen her journey to campaign rally speaker and really bringing on a lot of probably new voters. For Donald Trump, definitely bringing in a lot of new voters to Donald Trump. So we'll talk about that too in the second half hour. Support our work. Donate today at aclj.org. It's so important that you donate this month.
keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey folks, welcome back to Seculo. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. I want to let you know, you know, our ACLJ FOIAs are still uncovering corruption in the Biden-Harris deep state. I mean, they're still doing it. And it's now more important than ever to continue fighting during these, again, we're down to 67 days now of danger before Trump is sworn into office. We know we have to fight back. That's what our 2024 Faith and Freedom Drive is built for. And I want to go to the most recent FOIA. Will, we've got it in our hands here.
That's right.
This, again, is dealing with the Homeland, the Disinformation Board, which we know with Kristi Noem, the governor of North Dakota going in, is nominated again for Homeland. We have represented Governor Noem before in cases before at the ACLJ. We were honored to do that, and so we look forward to working with her there. I mean, I know that those boards aren't going to exist long. What we are interested in, too, is did they just fire some people and rename what they were doing and try to continue this work? Of course, it was made harder when Elon Musk bought Twitter, turned it into X, but there's still the others. Facebook even coming out, YouTube coming out, saying they don't, they think that the way that they were doing things was maybe not correct with letting the government tell them all what to do. But our FOIA is still uncovering, which will be interesting in the new Congress to start asking questions about the Democrat senators that were pushing Homeland to put forward these committees to control the discussions people were having online.
That's right, Jordan. And in this one, which just got released to us by the DHS after we had to file a lawsuit, once again, if you know, these processes take a long time, especially when Democrats are in office, because they don't want you to get the information. Hopefully a lot of that will change when some of the riffraff gets cleared out of some of these agencies. But what we're looking at here was correspondence between Kristi Canigayo, who was the senior official performing other duties of the deputy secretary, so acting deputy secretary of Department of Homeland Security. She flagged a Bloomberg government article about Homeland Disinformation Board paused after GOP backlash, and then sent directly to Director Mayorkas. See highlighted below. If possible, call Senator Murphy to brief him on the decision to pause the board's work. Bryn is connecting with his staff at 4:30. So what we have here is a sitting U.S. senator wanting a briefing from a cabinet member on why they were pausing the Disinformation Governance Board after everything we knew that was in the public about it.
Right.
He wanted a briefing. So these, when you go through these hundreds, sometimes thousands of pages that our attorneys are combing through, you find a nugget like this, and you understand that now there's more of the story we have to pursue. Yeah. What was members of the Senate's involvement in pressuring the White House and the Department of Homeland Security to crack down on free speech? Right. And also of note, this deputy secretary who was writing this information, asking Mayorkas to brief the senator, she worked at Google as a vice president of trust and safety from 2018 to 2021. Of course. So, of course, a big tech person working for trust and safety now discussing with the director, hey, you need to call and brief this senator.
That's Orwellian, like the trust and safety division to the disinformation board. I mean, you put this all together. This is what people want to stop. Okay, and this is why you bring in the Musk, you bring in the Vivek on the outside to say this is how much of it you can stop. By the way, this is how much money you're wasting on people like this. And we've seen that. Remember, they had access points, the FBI, into they had these computer accesses into Facebook, into Twitter, and even some of these law firms that were working with them, with these FBI desks at the law firms themselves. I mean, this all has to stop. Some of it, we are told, has stopped. We will now learn if it really did, and we will see how much of it was being pushed in a partisan manner, which makes it even, I think, more distasteful. You know it's partisan, but you know what I'm saying, coming in from other elected Democrats. I think we've still got a lot of work to do on these. I mean, there's lawfare still ramping up. There's government officials suing pro-Israeli parents for exposing anti-Semitism in schools here in America. We're filing in a critical case to fight back at the ACLJ. And this is our most important time of the year when it comes to determining the resources and finances we will have for the year ahead. And Lord knows there's going to be a lot of this is a perfect example of why the ACLJ has to exist. It's a beyond politics because it's for the American people. And when you see a wrong and you act on it, and then you end up getting sued, which we think is wrong that you would be sued for, again, calling out something and using your free speech to do so. But you do get sued, and then, you know, who's going to back you? Who's going to support you? Well, the ACLJ is there for you. And I want to go to CeCe Howe, because CeCe, this is a case I just had mentioned to folks where government officials, a teacher in this case, suing pro-Israel parents for exposing their anti-Semitism and that they were posting online and just telling people and then telling their Facebook friends and other parents that if you have a problem with this, if like I do, we should let the school know to make sure that this isn't being taught in the classroom, that this teacher isn't pushing this anti-Semitism on our students. And before she knew it, the parent was getting sued.
Yeah, and this is, again, trying to shut down pro-Israeli speech. So exactly like you said, you have a teacher who is posting inappropriate anti-Semitic posts, and the fact that a parent, rightfully so, reposts that post and says, hey, this is anti-Semitic, and other parents, if you have a problem, do like I am and reach out to the school board. And then that teacher just reacts and goes after our client. And it's ridiculous because the teacher thinks she has a First Amendment right to say whatever she wants to say. But of course, our client does not have a First Amendment right to say whatever she likes to say because it's pro-Israel information. And so, you know, the First Amendment does protect the expressions of opinions, and we are defending, you know, our client, and we are in a very good position to, win this.
Yes, I think this shows you folks why you got to support the ACLJ too. I mean, this is a really critical time for us. We do this towards the end of the year, wait till after the election, where, again, we put together during this Faith and Freedom Drive the resources that we have to not just to finish out the year, but to be prepared to start January 1st, knowing that there's going to be the confirmation battles, these cases, the lawfare will continue. Even in these last days of the Biden administration, I don't think we've seen the worst. I mean, we've seen the FBI raid, you know, Polymarket. What else is the FBI going to do to kind of try to act? There's some of their final acts on what they perceive to be as, you know, pro-Trump or pro-conservative companies or businesses. You know, they wanted to ruin Elon Musk and take away his businesses. Now, and they were talking about that, though they loved him years ago, and they all drive his cars for virtue signaling purposes. And they think that was great until he decided that their attack on free speech had gone too far. He actually said today, you know, I'm not so left as like Soros, but what I am going to do is I'm going to spend the money to make sure this country gets back to sanity, which I think is, you know, where the business world wants to see the country, and where most people do too. It's not about going hard right or hard left. It's about sanity with our DAs, sanity when it comes to free speech. And the idea here that a parent is going to be sued for defamation because they speak up about a teacher putting out information that would be inappropriate to share in class.
Yeah, and it's lawfare. I mean, we've seen that. They have used lawfare against Israel time and time again. We saw that after October 7th, anti-Semitic attacks increased 400%. 400%. And we're seeing that across the board. And it's not now just in, you know, government levels. This is literally a school level with a parent being attacked by a teacher who thinks she has every right to post anti-Semitic, you know, content, but a parent does not have any right to say, I disagree, and this is not appropriate, and we need to bring this to the school board.
And you know, Jordan, when you look at even this case, and we said this yesterday on the broadcast, that when people who share policy goals with our ideology as conservatives are in the White House, it actually makes our work spread out, because it's no longer fighting against the federal government for constitutional policies that we want to see incorporated in America and get back to sanity. But then you start to see we have to have more resources, because you're focusing on all of the blue states that then, as reaction to conservative victories and you know, rational victories in America, they try to go as far left as they can.
Yeah.
And when you're in a state like Illinois, that's where, one, you could be concerned that the politics on the ground there aren't in favor of someone who doesn't want their child to be instructed with anti-Semitism and anti-Israel by a theater director at a public high school. So then you have to get in court. So it actually causes the work of the ACLJ to become more important and have to have more resources, because you're not just focusing on Washington. Yeah. You're focusing at the 20 plus states. They're going to be trying to go after conservatives as retribution for a Trump victory in D.C. And I think also it goes to show that the left hasn't learned, and we'll see how this plays out in Illinois, but the left hasn't learned even the mistakes of what happened in Virginia, where Virginia going more and more blue until they started going after parents speaking out at school board meetings, and Governor Youngkin wins a resounding victory there. If you keep having parents' rights taken away, their ability to speak on behalf of their children, you're going to turn off everyone in this country, and you're going to see traditional blue states flipping red, because that's not okay. You have to allow parents free speech to not get slapped with a defamation lawsuit just because they're trying to stick up for their kids.
So where does this stand now, CC, in court? Like, what's the makeup once we got involved?
Yeah, so it has been removed to federal court. It started out in state court. It's been removed to federal court. And right now we just started. It's just in its early stages, but we are defending the lawsuit. The teacher sued the school board as well. And so we are defending the parent in this. And so it's just in its early stages, but we are in federal court defending.
I think Will is absolutely right, too. This is not going to be the end of this. We're going to see more and more of this in the deep blue states who think the rest of the country is insane and that there's something wrong with us. So you have to quiet us. You have to quiet us talking about our faith. You have to quiet us. You know, if we support Israel, we must be crazy. If you voted this way, what's happened? You know, even kind of like what John Fetterman said, this whole idea that this syndrome. Remember, we've talked about it before for how many years? Trump derangement syndrome. It's been on full display. Now, I think what he's doing, we're going to talk about too, is he's pushing the left, because this time around, he got elected again against all these cases and booking him and photographing him, making him sit through hours and hours of court, getting shot, almost getting shot again with another assassination attempt, and having a nominee switched halfway through because the first candidate they chose to run against him looked like they could no longer hold it together mentally, so they throw another candidate in their place who never got any votes, beats them, winning the popular vote, winning the Electoral College, which is all you have to do to be the president. That's the game you have to play. But I do think he strategically went to some states that were not going to be states you could win to make sure there were more people understood it was important to get out the vote in big numbers. And we kept preaching that here too, because the left's move was going to be, and we've taken that away from them, this idea that, you know what, we need to move away from the Electoral College, we need to go to popular vote. And now they're looking and saying, uh-oh, wait, you mean if Republicans go to California, there's more Republicans that may actually vote there because you're telling them why you need them to vote? And so it's actually not so easy just for Democrats to win the popular vote? Yeah. And you just got a taste of it in this election. If you really knew that was where to put the resources and how to win, I think that you could still find a lot more Republican votes out there. We were just tip of the iceberg in some of these places that we knew were not going to be Electoral College victories for President Trump. We got a lot to talk about. We want to hear from you at 1-800-684-3110. But I do want to let you just know that we don't say this for nothing, that this is such an important time of the year for us at the ACLJ. We've been doing a lot of work. That means a lot of resources have been depleted. And you've been following all of our work. You've been following what we've got to you on. We tried to talk about as many of the cases as we can on this show. We had a lot going on in the country and the world, still do. So some of those we didn't even get to. They're online at aclj.org. Others we did. But we are also going to continue to update you on how this transition is moving forward and how the promise of a peaceful transition. I think, yes, you'll see that. I think some of these hearings, though, there's going to be fireworks at. And some of those might involve our friends, like Tulsi Gabbard. So we're going to talk about her nomination when we come back on Seculo. But I encourage you, we were able to build those kind of teams for you to get through these 4 years and beyond so that you would have expert information to take to your friends and family and to learn so that when we were discussing complicated international issues, you were learning from the best people who had the best information, who had access to all of the information, and they were able to continue to educate you. It takes resources. To represent you in court takes resources. We're ready to go to fight back. I don't think we've seen the end of lawfare. I think we've seen the beginning of a move at the federal level to end lawfare. But that does not mean these states and localities and district attorneys are done. And while it might be harder for them to come after the president, guess who they'll start looking for? Oh, the low-hanging fruit. That's us, the citizens, who don't have those same capabilities. So support the work of the ACLJ this month. Double the impact of your donation if you donate today at ACLJ.org. We need those resources. Please donate. ACLJ.org. Double your impact. All right, welcome back to Seculo. So we want to talk about this, too, because it's very cool. Something, of course, it's not unprecedented ACLJ, but at this time around, but to have Tulsi Gabbard, who we brought in on this broadcast to give you her perspective. And I think as if you remember when she first started with us, was really just starting to speak out. She was on Fox News some and speak out about why she had left the Democrat Party. She had not yet joined the Republican Party. She had not yet endorsed President Trump. There was still primaries going on, things like that. But started to speak about issues that mattered to her about the country. Free speech, you know, being one of those. Just kind of the craziness of the social programs going on with our kids and not focusing in enough on our own national security while we were funding wars that we never got and we still don't always, you know, get like clear indication of what do you want to see as the outcome here. Like, how does this end? And I think that after we saw that botched withdrawal from Afghanistan, after Ukraine continues, and what we were told about that conflict, great, it didn't happen. Russia was not able to destroy Ukraine in 3 days like we were being told. But we also haven't figured out a way, an exit point for any of this conflict. So it's you cannot have a hot war in Europe ongoing just indefinitely that we are going to fund, which also cuts off any kind of ability to reopen and restart any relationship with Russia to try and move them away from just trying to partner with the Chinese or the North Koreans like they are doing, when we were able to kind of keep the North Koreans away by President Trump's and Mike Pompeo's diplomatic work to North Korea, which was attacked by the left, unprecedented. But you didn't see deals being made between Iran and North Korea then. You didn't see rockets being launched, and you didn't see Russia running over to make military deals or bringing military troops from North Korea over after President Trump had those two summits. Did they get everything they wanted out of those? Absolutely not. But they got a lot, and it just shows you what you can do with starting with unique and different styles of diplomacy. So the left, even some of my friends who are Democrats, who are usually pretty, actually have a pretty good head on their shoulders, I would say, like Jared Moskowitz, who is someone who he worked for Ron DeSantis as the emergency director. He was on this broadcast a lot then. He is very supportive of Israel. He helped us organize the meetings in Washington, D.C., with the families from the October 7th, those who were at that time hostages. In those families, they ended up being killed. But they met with both Republican leadership and Democrat leadership, and that was a big thanks to Jared. But this Tulsi Gabbard appointment has got them unnerved. And I think, again, she was a former Democrat, so she has been on their side of the aisle before. So some of it, I think, is that, well, you left our party, we're going to take it out on you. But others is, you know, they want to, they're going back to that same old stuff, Will, of Russia. And, you know, she had a meeting in Syria. I point this out to them. She's been in the military for over 20 years and has one of the highest clearance levels you can receive in the military. All of those things happened while she was in the military. If it wasn't sanctioned to some extent that we probably won't know about ever in open door hearings or anything like that, do you think that the military would say, you know what, you did this, but we don't care. We're going to keep giving you access like this. So as a congressman, maybe think twice before going on the attack about meetings that you haven't even, well, you're not going to have a chance to ask about as a House member, but I'm sure senators are going to ask about, and I think some of those are going to have to be answered behind closed doors. But people on the right have gotten to know Tulsi Gabbard, Will, through broadcasts like ours, where we've had extended discussions about every issue you can think of, both domestic and foreign. And what we know is that she cares most about the American people and getting our military back on track, getting our intelligence community back on track. And she has a big job to take. I mean, we've had Rick Grinnell's on our team. I mean, he was the acting director of national intelligence. I mean, tell people, it's 13 additional intel agencies plus DNI? 17.
So as DNI, Director of National Intelligence, she will oversee and coordinate between 17 intelligence agencies.
Some of those you know well, like the CIA. Right. Others that are like attached to different branches of the military. Right.
The DEA has an intelligence right. agency. The Space Force has an intelligence arm. So all of these arms are then coordinated and overseen by the Director of National Intelligence. And I think one thing, she's had intelligence roles in the military. She was a member of Congress. She's very smart. One thing she doesn't like, though, is the misuse of our intelligence agencies. Right. She wants our intelligence agencies to be efficient and to serve the purpose of national security, not spying on American citizens. And if anyone should know about abuses of intelligence and spying on American citizens, it is Tulsi Gabbard, yeah. who not only served as a member of the broadcast and the team here, but as a client of the ACLJ. When it was discovered, she was put on the Quiet Skies list and was yeah. being surveilled by canine teams and air marshals on domestic flights.
Yes. I mean, getting, you know, on the one hand saying, you know, oh, are we clearing this up for you? And then it doesn't get cleared up and you got to go through 45 minutes extra security twice to board a domestic flight. And this is, again, this happens when you start speaking out as someone who is supportive of President Trump, ultimately becoming a Republican. But this idea of intelligence being misused, as Will said, this is someone, again, who has spent more than two decades in the U.S. military, has continued to move up in rank, has continued to have higher levels of access to classified information, so those security clearances. And the left, I think, needs to be very careful about going way too far in seeing whatever Tulsi has done publicly with a diplomatic work or work as a member of Congress when they forget the work that she is doing in the military and has done in the military and her career in the military that's been, you know, on the same track. And I will tell you, many of you, I remember when she first came on, said, I like that you have her on the show. I think, you know, it'll be interesting to learn, is she really with us on the issues? And I think now that you've gotten through the election cycle, you realize, yes, she is. I mean, especially if you're someone who wants to clean up Washington, D.C., it's not that we want to do away with intelligence. It's that we want to put the intelligence back on track. Like Will said, we don't need to be spying on pro-life Americans. We don't need to be spying on members of Congress or former members of Congress who decide to switch parties. And because their politics are different now, suddenly they've got air marshals with them and people going through their luggage in front of the public, you know, to try and embarrass them and make traveling around the country difficult while a campaign that they are assisting with is going on. I think, listen, who better to take on that role than someone who has been abused by the intel community? So instead of just someone who has always been on the side of intel community and loves the intel community and thinks everything is great and everything's hunky-dory, and you know what? I think of all the branches of government, it's one that you can clean up the quickest, because I think there probably are mostly still a lot of good people there. They aren't trying to make names for themselves. It's actually the opposite of that. You typically don't even know who these individuals are unless they have to become whistleblowers or something like that. Put someone into place who understands how it can go wrong and how that can really impact an American citizen. And let's get our intelligence right so that we are protecting ourselves against terrorism, against the cartels, the dealers, the distributors of fentanyl killing Americans, the bad guys. That's the focus of these agencies. So we're going to be there. We know we're going to need your support to fight for these confirmations. Some of these are going to be tougher than others, and those are the ones we usually get involved in. We want to be standing up with those nominees, especially those who have worked with us at the ACLJ. And we know you want to see us there doing that. So support the work of the ACLJ today, and those resources will be ready to go when those hearings begin, even as we prepare for those hearings. Donate today at ACLJ.org. Double the impact of your donation for our Faith and Freedom Drive. That's ACLJ.org. Donate today.